listening to the Vancouver Mixtape on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Solo Catesy, and other Coast Salish peoples. My name is Jesse.
I'm Jamie.
Oh, that's...
I'm Jamie.
There we go.
We did it.
And we are joined in studio by the one and only Che Ami Dorval. Hello, Che, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. Should I get up closer to this mic?
Sure, yeah, dig in.
Hello, I'm great. The one and only.
The one and only?
I mean, I assume so. I don't technically know that for sure.
We didn't fact check that, but...
Never fact check it.
No,
I like it.
We're just going to assume. Yeah, that works. Welcome to our basement.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in and braving the snowstorm.
I know. It's so un-Vancouver of me. I left my house.
Holy smokes.
What?
You put on boots and everything?
I know.
My God.
Wow. I've got heels on them.
Wow, you're rolling the dice.
Yeah.
I love the commitment. Love the commitment.
Yeah, we appreciate your dedication to coming and joining us here. We're very excited to talk about the new record, The Crowned, which is out now. Very great.
Thank you.
Long awaited.
Yeah, I'm super slow in a lot of ways.
I mean, there's a couple things that happened over the last couple of years.
Oh, right. And then there's that. Yeah. Half the songs were done before the pandemic, and then the other half came after. So I guess it's good that it's long awaited.
Cause it wasn't ready.
Yeah, it just wasn't ready. I just needed that extra trauma.
It informs the best music, so it works.
Doesn't it just?
So did that grant you more time to sit with the songs? And like, did you end up tweaking and editing and maybe doing more with them that you maybe would not have otherwise?
No. Yes and no. There were five songs beforehand that were like, they were ready. They were ready, and I didn't touch them. And then there were like another six, or I have no idea how many songs are on this record.
I think it's 11. I think you got the math right.
There were another six that I've been messing with forever. And so, yeah, the pandemic allowed time to just sit with them and play. And then they made more sense with the other songs, and here we are.
Are you pretty sick of them at this point?
I'm always sick of them. As soon as they're done, the first draft, I hate every moment of them. No, I like them. I like these ones. Yeah.
And do you think, like, having those, the five already done, like, did you use those as references to, like, look back and craft the new ones, or did that just totally separate?
That would have been a plan in action. That is not how I roll. No, I just put them all together in a way that made sense sort of lyrically also, sort of a timeline of whatever has happened in my existence, and then just hoped they made sense. And I think they do all together.
The record feels cohesive. It feels like it's all one thing with a lot of different parts.
Yeah, which is so crazy because it was recorded and written in two different countries, with like a bunch of different sets of people, different times of my life. It's just, yeah, it couldn't be any further apart. But maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's like a compilation, like, record, you know? Like, the commonality is, like, the person, the feeling, and you're reaching out into, like, whatever sonic environment makes sense of that. Just, that was a weird sentence.
I don't know. I think I get the gist of what you're saying there, where it's, like, it's all filtered through you, right?
Yeah.
If it's all being filtered through the same lens, then it doesn't matter that it's all these disparate experiences and parts and timelines.
Yeah. I love you. Your answer.
Just
that's what I'm here for.
Amazing.
Now, it is a pretty, like, I find it to be, like, very big and, like, dramatic. It's very theatrical, almost. Whereas, like, the mood and previous releases that you've had are similar. This one seems to be just be like far more, I guess, theatrical is the word I'll go with. Is that, like, was that a conscious decision, or did that just unravel itself like that?
I think it unraveled, and I just grew up, and in growing up, all of the tiptoeing, all of the, like, insecurities and the, like, ooh, I don't know, sort of went out the window, and I just said and played whatever it was bombastically, however I felt it in the moment, because I just felt like I didn't have any time to mess around, you know? And so, yeah, there was no... I've heard a lot of people say some of the songs sound like James Bond themes.
Sure, okay.
Which is great. Yeah. I love that. And maybe that's because it feels like life is one big James Bond adventure with villains just all over the place, and you're just trying not to die.
Yeah.
And that's this album.
Well, and I think there's something about, like, a lack of self-consciousness that plays into what Jamie's saying about, like, the theatricality or the drama of it all, is that, like, it's not always cool to be theatrical or dramatic, and it can very easily go the way of, like, oh, look how hard that person's trying.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
But you manage on these songs to pull off this, like, to pull it off in a way that is, like, engaging and cool. So,
thank you.
Yeah, nice work.
Aw, thanks. I never feel cool, so that's great.
So what are we telling you? Softball questions from here on.
Love it. I'm living here forever.
let's get into, I was going to say the first song, but it's actually the last song on the album is the one that Che wanted to start with. What can you tell us about What Is Enough, Desired and Adored?
So, a fellow Vancouverite, Olivier Martin, and I wrote this together, and I just love it. It encompasses all of the music I listen to on my own. Like, it reminds me kind of Portishead and Massive Attack, and I've always wanted to sort of live in that realm, and with this song, I feel like I finally, you know, did my version of that vibe, and it's also just, it's just about, like, screaming out your desires, which, you know, feels nice. So it's like a positive, there are not many positive songs on this album, but this is one of them. And yeah, I just like it.
Great. This is What Is Enough from The Crowned by Che Ami Dorval here on the Vancouver Mixtape. Is Enough, Desired and Adored by Che Ami Dorval, who is here live with us in studio here on the Vancouver Mixtape. Welcome once again, Che. I'm
going to
move this monitor so I can actually
see.
There we go. Oh, my gosh.
What?
That is the last track on your new record, The Crowned. You mentioned a maybe a Portishead influence there, trip-hop generally. We're talking on the break about our love of Portishead in particular. What is it about Portishead that appeals to you so much and or maybe inspires you musically?
I love the darkness of it, the darkness and the grit, and obviously her voice is just like chilling, and she sounds a bit like a witch, and I love it, and it's just, it makes sense of the world, that's what the world looks like to me, and so she basically sings the world and makes it beautiful, even though it's terrifying, like a witch, so...
They're always such a funny band because, like, even if it's the sunniest day in the middle of summer, if I, like, put on, like, Dummy or whatever, I'm just like, oh, cool, it may as well be raining.
Oh, right? Yeah, yeah, and it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It's good rain.
And you know what? I love the rain, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we live here. We have to say that.
Yeah.
Try it on for size.
But, like, that, you kind of mentioned that track, and maybe you're being a little funny about it, but, like, you we're suggesting that maybe What Is Enough doesn't get the love that it needs to.
Yeah, well, I mean, so...
But you said you really love that song.
I love that song. I love it. But I put it at the very end, which is, you know, not always the best idea if you want people to hear it, which I'm learning.
It's interesting because, you know, some of my favorite albums of all time have that killer last track,
yeah,
right? And it can be such a big part of the album as an experience, right? Mm-hmm. But I guess today you
it's not really
that's not how it's consumed necessarily.
And yeah, that's a good point. I feel like I created this album with that in mind. Like, it is a journey, and that song sound, there's a finality to it, and it just like a sigh out, a breath, like a, you know,
the end of a journey.
Yeah. And people don't really take the same types of journeys anymore. So don't put your best song, in your opinion, at the end of your record.
Do you feel the pressure to become a more singles-based artist? Like, I know you've released some singles of really great covers, which, quick side note, Jesse and I were, like, pretty obsessed with your cover of The Widow. Like, we are big Mars Volta boys.
Me too. Yeah, Mars Volta.
But do you feel that pressure to become more of a singles artist, or are you fine just keep on keeping on?
No, I don't feel any pressure because I never really know what I'm going to do next, because, like, maybe I will be a singles artist. It does seem a little less little easier, you know. So, and there's an appeal to that for sure, but I guess I always wanted to have that one album that did tell a story. Mm. Which, in my opinion, this one for me does. So now I just feel kind of free and loose, like I could do anything.
Yeah, you can do it. Yeah. We can do that ska band next. That's
funny, but I have discussed that with a few people,
and I
will play bass.
Hell yes,
I'm not singing.
Here for it. you mentioned that you have a bit of a narrative through line for this record. Can you talk a little bit about what that narrative is to you, or maybe what some of the themes are that you reiterate
throughout
the record?
Yeah, of course. There's no like linear story, and I don't think I even really knew what the narrative was until actually I started doing like interviews and podcasts, and people asked me this question, and I'm like, oh, what is it? You know, it feels like a story musically to me, and I know my life is a story because I live it every day, but like, I had no idea sort of what the story was, and then a few days ago, I took the time to listen to it through, to the lyrics, and it's really just like, it's just a bunch of heartbreak and loss, and then I can't say that word. I'm trying not to swear. How do you express yourself? Like a sort of like an F you moment, right?
Very skillful.
Thank you.
You dodged that like a pro.
Thank you very much.
Radio.
So yeah, like hurt feelings, F you moment, a sort of like a rebirth, a finding yourself, and then a big old sigh, and like, you know, it's not an intricate story.
Hey,
everyone's
classic
been there.
Story structure, right?
Yeah, the hero's journey.
Well.
It's not at all, but we'll say it is.
Yeah. I didn't think you're the Luke Skywalker of this album.
Yeah. Thanks, man. More like the Chewbacca.
Hey, a beloved character.
Yeah.
But have you received any feedback from people that have dug into the album, like kind of relating to some of those themes that you've put in for? Like, have people messaged you and been like, hey, like, you nailed it? Because, look, you've joked a lot about it being, like, dark and stormy, and while it is, it doesn't pull any punches on, like, the emotion you're trying to convey.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, has anybody, like, said anything to you about, like, these themes resonating with them?
They have. And, I mean, like, with every song, you know, it means so many different things to so many different people. But, I mean, for me, this song is about almost like a death, right? Like a death of self, relationship. Even some of it's just, you know, regular run-of-the-mill death. And I've had a few people reach out in that regard, which is quite beautiful and quite heavy to be, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but to be like this, the solace in that stage of life or in that experience. But I've always wanted to, like, that's why I write and show it to people. I've always wanted, because that's what people do for me. Like, that's what gets me through the day, right? Like, connecting through music and, like, seeing your story reflected in some way and connecting with that. And so, yeah, some people have reached out, and it's really beautiful. It's sad, but it's really beautiful.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's good to be able to find the beauty in that sadness, right? Because otherwise it's overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And music, that's what music does. That's what it does for us, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then also dancing.
Honestly, it's the two things we shoot for on this show, to either dance or to bum ourselves out.
Yes, and that's balance.
I think we should cut to another track off the record. Any recos from your end? Where should we go here?
Do we want to bum ourselves out more, or like what do we want? Or do we want?
I'm kind of interested to hear what is your happy dancey jam on the record? Like what is the pick me up on the record?
The one pick me up. Okay, it's called Want That Soul. Yeah, but it's about death. But anyways, it sounds happy.
Hey. That's all we can ask for.
Yeah.
There's nuance in everything, folks.
Here it is, Want That Soul by Che Ami Dorval on the Vancouver Mixtape.
Touch your ghost, make it come. His heart's
Soul by Che Ami Dorval here on the Vancouver Mixtape on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Che is in the studio with us this hour, guest curating this episode of the Mixtape, and we're chatting about the new record, The Crowned. That's the record that Want That Soul came off of, the Pick Me Up track that was still about death.
Yeah.
You were right, though. Great dancey groove to it.
Right?
Yeah.
You can't tell. You hide it. You hide it behind the music.
Exactly. Yeah. Good vibe shifter, but again, still the through line's there.
There you go.
You're dancing, but you're still bummed.
You're still just a little sad, and you don't know why.
So we mentioned, you mentioned earlier in the show that you had written and recorded 5 of the tracks on this record before pre-COVID,
yeah.
And then wrote the second 6 afterwards. You recorded the first 5 with Bob Rock.
Yeah.
That as a name is sort of like beyond the stratosphere of what producers of artists we usually have on the show.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about, like, what did working with Bob Rock bring to the music?
He's awesome. It's interesting. The way we did those songs, it was a collaboration. It was like a fluke. It was like a chance meeting that turned into, hey, do you want to mess around with some songs? And I was like, oh, of course I do. And so it was really casual, and we when he was in town, we'd go into the studio, which I'm not used to, because I usually just, like, I write and record on my own, and then if I'm working with somebody, I'll just send it to them. It's a very, like, solitary thing. But he's Bob Rock.
Sure.
So we'd go down to the warehouse and we'd just, like, fool around with music. And he's just, like, a solid, like, lovely, wonderful human who doesn't make you feel like there's no, everybody's equal. You're just people. You both like music. And, yeah, it's easy to create in that environment. And so, yeah.
Were there any, like, maybe lessons or was there anything that you got out of that experience that, like, kind of changed the way that you approach your music now, or maybe informs how you approach writing and recording?
Yeah, actually, I got a lot out of that. There's so much to learn from him, obviously. He was talking about how when he was working with Gord Downie, because they just released an album, well, obviously posthumously, but so Gord would, like, he wouldn't be finished with a song until, like, the lyrics of a song until he, like, sang the final take, like he was dragged away from the microphone and, like, the song's done, you know, like that lyric, that whole song was being written every single day, rewritten, rethought. And I've never worked like that. But yeah, Bob mentioned it, and with these songs specifically, I kind of tried that hat on, and now that's all I do, because everything, you know, time gives you the chance to sort of reflect on what things truly mean to you and how, like, what you want to convey, how you can convey it better. So, like, that lyrically, he changed. It was a game changer. And then also, this is just basic. Like, it does sound better in a studio.
Yeah, they have those for a reason, I guess.
They do. Yeah. So, yeah, I shall be using those more.
The rewriting thing is really interesting to me, because, like, for any kind of writing, like, if you're writing a short story, you're supposed to write it and rewrite it and rewrite it and rewrite it. And I guess I didn't really think about songwriting in that way, where you would, you know, just keep reiterating and figuring out, like, how to optimize it each time or whatever.
Yeah, I never thought about that either.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so, sometimes it just, when you songwrite, it's such a release.
It just comes out.
And you're like, oof.
Well, that's done.
Yeah. And it's like, not necessarily. And, like, the things that can come from you just, you know, working with it, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
One of the questions that I like to, because, like, the songwriting process is something that I'm endlessly fascinated with, just because it's so different for everyone, right?
Yeah.
You touched a little bit about, like how Gord Downie kind of viewed like a song being done. What is it for you then? Like, have you adopted that fully, or is there a different way for you where you tell yourself, like, this feels complete now? When is a song finished for you?
Yeah, when is a song finished for me? Maybe it's just that. Maybe it's similar. It's finished when you can't go any further because you've put it out. And mm-hmm. There you go. You did it. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, these songs on this record, the ones that I did after COVID, my mixing engineer hated me. He loved me, but and I get it. And it, like, sorry. But yeah, I remember we mixed the whole record and we were sending it to mastering. Oh, yeah, even further, we were filming the music video for one of the tracks. And I heard the track while we were, like, doing the music video, and I was like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
This isn't done. This isn't done. Like, this vocal take and, like, this mix and maybe this word. And so, like, I, like, went back into the studio, fixed everything I thought needed to be fixed, went back home. It was a lot of money. And then realized it's fine. It was fine the way that it was. It was fine.
Oh, no.
So, like, when is the song done?
Right.
I don't know.
I'm so sorry I asked.
Yeah. It was a very stressful week for everybody.
Oh, that's funny. Now, you have a couple of videos out from four tracks off this record. What was that experience like? Like, is music? Do you just adopt music video making into the process now? Is that just something that you're like, okay, we're doing an album, and then it's the videos that are coming, or is that something that you've always kind of seen as part of the whole project?
Well, now I do. Now I do for sure. In the past, it was like, make an album, don't tell anybody, and then work at a cafe.
A tried, tested, and true approach.
Yeah.
And it worked, right?
It worked for me, yeah. I guess. But this one, I guess the last record, it's funny. You guys know Jen Fritz. Mm-hmm. She's my mm-hmm. publicist. Mm-hmm. She's amazing.
Thank you, Jen, for saying
yes,
that.
Yes, right? She is the reason I had those first music videos for that record, because she was like, you know, after you release this, like, you need to have something to talk about. And, like, I was like, but do I?
Is the record not enough?
Right? Like, I'm tired from working this cafe shift. So then I did it, and then it kind of hit home. I was like, oh, there is a process to this. Yeah, you make the record, and then there's more.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's fun. It's just another part of the art, you know? Mm. It's a way to kind of spread your wings a little bit. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. And how involved are you with the videos? Like,
very involved. Mm-hmm. I'd like to be less involved.
Yeah.
That's the key. I'd like to not be in them.
Mm.
And then to just direct somebody else.
Yeah.
That would be great. But the first one, I was very involved. It was me and Aaron Nathanson, who's wonderful, and Samuel Chadwick. And I don't know why I said his full name like that. He's my husband. Like, I know him very well. And we did that whole video together. And it was like, really big, because none of us knew what we were really doing, and we had to, like, rent out a studio, and, like, we had to build a bedroom, like a whole bedroom with walls and, like, wallpaper.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was very involved.
Well, now you've got set deck experience.
I do.
You know, you can ditch the cafe job for a job in film.
Oh,
hey!
Already on it. Yeah, that's cool, though.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that, there's bands in this scene, and not bands that maybe aren't even like at the stature that you're kind of heading towards, that like every song needs video. I'm just like, this sounds exhausting.
This sounds exhausting.
So much work.
Oh,
yeah, you gotta have the visual album.
Oh, wow. Also, like, that's expensive.
Right.
Like, wow.
Yeah, if you thought recording music was expensive,
right?
Wait until you have to shoot a music video.
Oh, my God. Our first one, because we were novices, I'm not going to say, it was a lot,
A lot more than it should have been.
And I learned.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Learning is good. We like learning
me
on
too.
The show.
Yeah, me too. Not the hard way. Not anymore.
You've learned the lessons. You get that. Now, you have friends.
Yeah.
That
I have friends.
And some of them play music.
They
as
do.
Well.
Yeah.
You've got some recos. What are we going to cue up first here?
Okay, so we're going to cue up Cassidy Waring, and her song is Nostalgia, because I love it. And she's great, and she's like one of my best friends. We live in the same apartment building, so our life is very much like friends.
Nice.
Like,
were you friends before you moved into the apartment building, or did you meet each other as a result of
being
neighbors?
Yeah.
That's fun.
I know, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she's an amazing, amazing musician, and yeah, this song is one of my favorites.
Cool. Here it is, Nostalgia by Cassidy Waring on the Vancouver Mixtape. JSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. It was Nostalgia by Cassidy Waring. A friend of our guest in the studio today, Che Ami Dorval. I want to keep saying welcome every time. Welcome once again.
Thank you, sir.
We just heard, a friend of yours, Cassidy Waring, and we're talking about your new record. You've done other stuff though too.
I have.
Tell me, how did you and Devin Townsend cross paths?
How did we cross paths? Oh, so my guitarist a while back, Dave Young, who, do you guys know him?
No.
No, he's lovely. He was in Devin's band, and Devin was looking for a vocalist for his album Key, which I think was part of like a trilogy of something. Anyways, it was me, and we met. And we drove out to Dave's house in, where was it? I don't know, Abbotsford or something. And he set up a recording studio in his basement with, like, couch pillows. And we just, like...
The best soundproofing.
The best. And we just got to know each other, basically, under this, like, couch pillow fort.
Hey, you know what? Instant intimacy.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And we were, like, we were very similar humans. And then we just kept in touch and... turned into we started a band together called Casualties of Cool,
which hell of a band name, by the way.
Thank you. At first I was like, wow, that's terrible. And then it grows on you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a sort of like a dark ambient country album. And I love him. He's like, actually, it's interesting, his wife was best friends with my uncle growing up.
Small world.
Yeah. Isn't that
wild.
So weird? And we didn't know until like years after working with each other.
Crazy.
Yeah. And they were best friends. They had like, they traveled across Canada together, and Tracy had a snake, like a boa constrictor. And for some reason, she decided she couldn't have it anymore. So she gave it to Pat, and I grew up with that snake.
Wow.
And yeah, it's such a small weird
world.
It's
like a snake nephew.
Right? That's exactly what it was.
Exactly.
How did you know?
That's so, like, you seem to be able to thrive in both a collaborative environment as well as, like, just writing and recording on your own. Do you have a preference, or are there elements of each that you kind of like to have on their own? Like, you like those experiences on different levels?
Yeah. Well, at first I always thought that I was more of a solo, like, I don't collaborate, it's too scary. And it is. It can be. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, I'm a control freak, and that it doesn't lend itself well to collaboration generally, but you also don't get the magic, you know, that you can possibly get with someone else's input, because it leads you in these directions you never would have gone to, and that's super interesting, and it makes it more fun. It makes like writing more like a game,
mm-hmm.
in a way,
mm-hmm.
you know,
or like an activity you're doing together,
and like a you know, self-discovery. You're like, wow, I didn't know that, you know, I could exist in this area. So now I feel like I like collaborating more, but it's a very detached kind of collaboration. Like Devin was like this too. We were both each other's first collaborators, aside from his band, Strapping Young Lads. But yeah, it's a detached collaboration where, like, say somebody has like a guitar line and they send it over and you're like, ooh, and you like riff on that at your like own house without mm-hmm. anybody watching, because you can be the most free, and then you just like bounce it back and forth. Like, that's the kind of collaboration I love.
Mm-hmm.
The sitting in the same room. I used to be a very, very shy, like terrified child, and so speaking up was always like, ooh, to me. And sometimes that comes out in creative situations, because I don't know why. So it's just better to not have that even be a possibility,
right,
if you're just If the internet's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really like modern way to make music,
yeah.
Right? And I think that more and more artists are taking advantage of that, of being able to like do stuff on your own, but also collaboratively and sort of like trade it back and forth.
And then you learn the album together, like as you play it, which is also really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it's a whole other world then with that person beside you. And yeah.
Well, and there's like totally different experience with just like writing something. We'll say you go and use the guitar riff or whatever as an example, and you're just kind of like, if you're doing it on your own, you're like, is that good?
Yeah.
We'll find out. But like, there's nothing more validating than like the person you're working with being like,
ooh,
dude, that rules.
Love that.
It's so sick. And you're like, hell yeah, it is sick.
Yeah, well, check
I'm sick.
Out.
We're sick.
Totally. Yes, exactly.
I don't know if it was on air or off air, but Jamie mentioned that we were obsessed with your cover of The Widow by the Mars Volta. And you put out a bunch of covers both as singles and then on the Sad Songs for Quarantined Lovers EP thing that you put out. One thing, how often do you get to do a cover song where the original writer of the song plays bass on the cover?
Only the one time.
Right? It's a pretty cool thing, I think. But also, how do you, like, when you're picking a song to cover, are you just picking songs that you like, or is there something that, like, draws you to be like, oh, no, this is a song that I want to perform?
I think it's a bit of a mixture. The only song, actually, that I covered on Sad Songs, which was a song that I, like, desperately love, was Blue Factory Flame, because I love Songs Ohio and Magnolia Electric Company, and I love him. And that, it's funny, that was the one that I liked the least that I covered.
Yeah, that works.
It's funny how that works. I really did not do that justice in my eyes. But the other ones, like the Almost Again one, which was the Devin one, it was a weird perk. I was like, hey guys, like, help me pick a song to cover, and I don't know, there was some sort of monetary thing going on there, which is great.
I like, look at you, what song did I cover? Like, my song.
The one that gets me paid.
So somebody picked Almost Again. And yeah, you know what? I know the answer to this. I like picking songs I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then not, like, don't know them at all, because I didn't know Almost Again. And then listening to it, like, maybe twice, and then being like, I get it, I know this song, and then trying to recreate what you thought it was,
mm-hmm.
which is never really what it was, and then I find you, like, you have this, like, beautiful thing that actually is a bit different. It kind of sets itself apart a bit.
There's some originality in it.
Yeah, I like mm-hmm. doing that. That's fun. Yeah.
And the best covers are always that, where it's, like, a re-envisioning of that original piece. Like, and nobody remembers a true-to-form cover, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless it's Real Big Fish's cover of Take On Me, which is
a plus. Should we be playing that?
If you think of, like, the most iconic covers of all time, like, they're usually, like, a reimagining or, like, a total different version.
Yeah. That's so true. Yeah. That makes me think of Biff Naked's Lucky. Do you remember Lucky? Biff Naked?
Was that a Britney Spears cover?
No, but I want to hear that.
Oh, man, yeah.
No, was it Lucky? Lucky Ones. Yeah.
Oh, sure, yeah, okay, yeah.
Who was the original of that? Because that wasn't her. She didn't write that song, I don't think.
Internet machine, let's go.
Come on, internet. My best friend.
Speaking of just while we're talking covers, did you guys ever listen to the Stereo Gum, like, Save Stereo Gum compilation that they did in the pandemic?
No.
They just, like, had a bunch of really cool artists cover songs from the aughts.
Oh.
And, like Illuminati Hotties did Lucky. And it's like, I don't know, it ruled.
Anyway,
this is a little
anecdote. I'm going to check that out later.
But yeah, no, it's... while we're looking that up to confirm the Biff Naked cover, you've got stuff coming up.
Oh, I do.
You do?
I do. What is time? We live here now. Like, what's going... So I have a show in Vancouver on March 18th at... what's it called? St. George.
Fabric St. George. Got it.
So that's going to be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And people should come and say hello. I'm planning a bunch of tours that are going to be in the fall for this record. Because I'm not going to do the thing that I do where I release something and
don't say anything about it. Do you know where yet, generally? Like
The UK and Europe.
Nice.
And then North America. And I'm trying to get a little slot in Australia. Wouldn't that be great?
Dream.
Right? It's like a vacation.
Yeah.
You're not even working. It's hot.
You barely have to put shoes on.
Right?
You know? Like... Shorts all the time.
Whatever. I was gonna ask, like, do you have a preferred place to tour? But I mean, kind of.
So I'm really hoping for that. Yeah, I've got that going on, and then do I have other things going on? What happens in life? What happens?
I don't know. I think it's showtime.
It's showtime. Yes.
Is that something that you have to switch gears for? Like, when you finish the album, you finish the videos, and then you're like, oh, now I gotta rehearse this thing.
Oh, my God. Actually, here's what I've learned.
Oh, let's
I've
go.
Done it the wrong way.
Okay, here we go.
What you do is you plan the tour months in advance before you release the record, because then you can play the tour right after the record, which is what people like to do.
And not have to wait...
Till the fall.
Summer.
Mm. Yeah. So that's for the next one.
Yeah. It'll still be fresh.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be fresh.
It'll be so fresh. Yeah, last song will get some play.
Exactly. And you know what? You can just come back right before you start and promo it all again.
Yeah.
It'll be like it just came out.
Thanks, guys.
We got you.
I feel so much better.
My very brief research leads me to believe that Lucky is in fact a Biff Naked original.
Did written you by write it?
Biff Naked and Brad McGivern.
No.
Yeah. I don't know who this Brad is, but he doesn't have a link. His name isn't linked in Wikipedia, so
well,
I don't think he's...
Biff. I love Biff Naked. Mm-hmm. She follows me on Instagram.
That rules.
And when I saw that, I cried. I did.
Local hero.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was also in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I was going to say...
Do you remember?
It's the house party in season 4
and
or whatever.
Slow dance and you're...
Yeah. Oh, the song, Lucky, is in fact on the Buffy the Vampire Slayer soundtrack.
Of course it is. Of course.
Great, like, all-time good soundtrack.
Oh, my God. Chivo Matto?
Oh, my God. So good.
Yeah.
A plus.
Spoon?
is the whole thing was beauty.
I have driven to Seattle with Jamie, where I'm pretty sure the only CD in the car was the Buffy soundtrack.
Really?
And it got repeated multiple times.
Yes.
Fortunately, it's very good.
Fortunately, it's
so
great.
Good. I love that show.
I will say, just before we go off the topic, because I know we're up against it, but like my favorite musical moment in that show was the Michelle Branch, when she sings the goodbye to you, and it ends with like Buffy and Spike making out.
Oh my God!
Right?
Oh, why was their relationship so hot?
Right?
And it shouldn't have been. There were so many problematic moments.
Oh yeah, looking back on it,
like,
not good. But
like, yeah, that's the power couple.
Oh yeah.
So Buffy concept record when?
Oh my God, you're right. How have I not thought of this yet?
We got work to do.
Totally. Oh, that'd be great.
I think we have time for one more song before
so
the top of the hour. Yeah, I know. Do we want to go with the title track
that
off the record?
Sense.
Yeah, let's do that. We played the last song. We played the upbeat dance song about death. And now we'll play the title track from The Crowned by Che Ami Dorval. This is, The Crowned.
Can't say I didn't know me.
That's The Crown by J.M.E. Dorval. As we talk about the end of things off mic. Because it's the end of the show. That's all I mean.
Yeah.
Jay, thank you so much for joining us this hour. It's been a blast.
Thank you. You guys are great. It's so fun.
Back whenever, especially when you've got the tour coming up.
Oh, my God, I will.
The Crown is out now. You can find it everywhere you find music. Where else can people find you out there in the world?
On all the things, on Instagram and Facebook and all the things under Che Ami Dorval. A lot of vowels in that name. Spelt weird. Good luck.
Thanks again, and we'll be back next week.